might be a preacher broadcasting on a satellite. Miss Mamie's looking for an answer. She watches your program every night. Shine from your praying hands. She sends you all the money she has. Just to feel a little closer to glory land.
This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. That music you heard coming in was not Miles Davis. No, it was Kevin Gordon, who's our country music star, who's with us today. And so, welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Grace.
And
great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Glory Land that we're listening to.
Okay. Glory Land is the title track from the album of the same name that was released in 2012. And the song itself, I suppose, came out of that first verse. You know, I started thinking about the character of the woman who sends all her money to the televangelist, and then sort of broadened my focus, you know, and started thinking about how the idea of faith, what that does in the American context and beyond.
You're really a social critic, you know.
Well, I'm usually not that idea-based, you know. I usually think in terms of experiences and write about those, but it just struck me, you know, the big idea being about the song that, you know, this idea of the afterlife or paradise or heaven or whatever, it is always elsewhere. No matter what you feel about one religion or another, that this longing for something else
out of reach
causes a lot of things to happen.
And that's what you're about. You cause a lot of things to happen. And here's what they say. They say that you have lyrically seduced your fans at jazz festivals with your tales of life in the conflicted modern South. He is from originally Louisiana, now 20-year veteran of East Nashville.
Yeah.
And Kevin Gordon is a touring recording artist and songwriter. Okay, we caught you on the wing. You've been on a tour. You're probably exhausted. Just take us where you've been in the last few days. Just start at the beginning and just give us the gigs.
Okay, well, it's been an interstate odyssey this past week. I tour solo about two-thirds of the time with a band the other third. So I left Nashville a week ago Sunday and started driving to Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Wow.
Yes. Took 2.5 days. And then the first show was in Cambridge. That was a band show with a rhythm section from there.
Did you know them?
I did know the drummer.
But you just walk in and all it becomes synchronized?
Well, I send them links to the songs I want them to learn.
Okay, keep going.
And it just, yeah, it does require a certain fearlessness, which can have an extremely positive effect on the performance, you know. Fear is very inspiring in that way.
Or terror.
Yes, terror. So we had a great night, and then I went down to a place outside of Philly and played the next night. And
alone?
I had a friend who's a very good drummer and percussionist join me, so it was a duo thing that night.
He just improvised?
Mm-hmm. He's done my gig before, so he's familiar with most of the songs I played.
Did you have a better time in Cambridge or a better time in Philly?
Well,
or are they both the same?
The Cambridge gig was great because it was, you know, it was a full-on band presentation, so it was... It was a rock and roll show.
A rock and roll show. Okay, we're in Philly now. You're not tired yet. What's the next one?
All right. After Philly was Manhattan, right? Yes, yes. I played at the Rockwood Music Hall down in the basement, stage 3, which is a fabulous little space to inhabit
nice
for an
acoustics.
hour. Lovely. And had a full room, which was great. I actually made money in Manhattan, probably.
No. Made money in Manhattan. There's your next song.
Yes, I actually added a digit to the income level that particular evening.
Does it depend on box office?
It does.
Oh dear, I'm sorry to hear that.
But it's great because it's a ticketed show, so the people
ahead of time.
The people who come are coming to hear you, and for me that's reassuring.
That is great. Kevin Gordon on the trail, and he's coming to us while he's been in many other cities. So I'm so happy we got him to land for a minute. 4 stars. The sheer brilliance of the lyrics to Colfax, Step in Time, alone justifies a top rating for the first album in 7 years from this Southern-raised poet rocker. A poet rocker. Okay, so you've taken us from Cambridge to Philly to Manhattan. Then where?
Let's see. And then Saturday, I was in Berks County, Pennsylvania. There's a B&B there that I have performed at every year for about the last 8 or 9 years.
Then what?
Then let's see. What's today? I'm serious.
If it's Monday, it must be Washington.
Okay, yesterday. Where did I go?
Baltimore.
Baltimore, thank you.
Why do you do all this?
It seems necessary to me that I continue to write these songs and record them and, for the most part, drive around and play them for folks.
Kevin Gordon, you're a poet. Well, and you have been said that by music critics. And the difference between a vocalist and a musician is the fact that you create your stories, you write your narratives, you tell your dreams, and the language is fabulous.
Well, thanks.
So let's talk about poetry a little bit.
Okay.
Give us one. Just for starts, give us a poem.
All right, you're very brave. that's just me. I'm happy to read a few. This is relatively new, I guess, from the last 10 years or so.
You call that new from the last 10 years?
Well, I peck away at it every now and then, revise it. You know, I gave my first reading about 6 months ago in over 20 years.
Well, so, we feel honored. Let us have it.
Okay. This is called Marvin. It's fairly self-explanatory. 1970, Ruston Elementary, Lincoln Parish, Louisiana. Kindergarten, my best friend, Marvin Washington, was black. We played a game called Cadillac at school. Ran till breathless, imagining ourselves cool Coupe de Villes, Fleetwood's Regal. Engines roar and rumble faked inside our mouths. We cut through loud gymnasium air on invisible roads declared by the stomp and halt of our feet from a flat-out run on the polished blonde floor. I don't remember how you won or lost, what the point was, the goal. Were there rules declaring when we were done? Friends, though he was never invited to my house, nor I to his, you just didn't do that back then, both of us knew. The next September, I was sent to Cedar Creek, private school they called it, inaugural year, new Kelly green carpets, chemical smell, flash of memory, yellow chalk stick snapped in my hand at the board and the other half fell, and as if they didn't exist, no blacks. I never saw Marvin again, or played a game called Cadillac, when our out-of-breath laughter echoed off the gym's high rafters to fade into common, colorless air.
That's the voice of Kevin Gordon, and he has been called many, many things because his poetry, his language is different from most other country music players. I like very much the way you talk about loss without talking about loss, and about how you just use character, situation, and plot, but at the center of that, we're left with that a great wound. And that's pretty much, I think, your imprimatur in mm-hmm. your lyrics. You tell a story, but then when you leave us, we know we've been through something that hurt. And that it was worth hearing because it was like our own lives. So mm-hmm. let's move from the poem to the lyric. And how does the poem move to the lyric? Or when you write songs, is it truly a different animal?
For me personally, I always shy away from declaring what the rules are for everyone.
I'm sure.
But for me, they are two entirely separate pursuits. Of course, there are things that you learn from writing poems that are applicable to songwriting, to lyric writing. And of course, I understand the ancient tradition of the lyric. I get it.
Well, you have a master's of fine arts in poetry from yeah. the Mecca of poetry, the University of Iowa.
I do.
So I think you know the meter.
Sure. I just think in a contemporary context that historical resonance doesn't matter as
doesn't
much
help.
Anymore.
Yeah.
I try to use similar, what I refer to as high-octane language.
Oh, that's a good point.
If it feels right in the context of a song.
Well, we're going to play a bit from Colfax.
Okay.
And that has been really received very, very well in this world. And it's one person says, "There's nothing else around today quite like Kevin Gordon's music. I'm a huge Kevin Gordon fan." This is a critic. "Think of John Lee Hooker tied to the hard, imagistic poetry of William Carlos Williams, and you get a little bit of an idea." Okay, just briefly set up the story for Colfax because we're going to hear the story.
Sure. The song is autobiographical. It's a true story. As I like to say, not that you get extra points for that, but in this case, everything that happened in the song happened in the experience.
Let's hear a little bit of it first, and then we'll talk about it.
Sure.
I played trumpet in the band in seventh grade, blasting out songs at football games and fall parades. We'd ride the bus to the small towns like Winfield, Downsville, and Colfax, in purple jackets and white slacks. We were the Braves. We were the Jack Hayes Braves, named after a dead administrator and the noble idea of a young Native American male. School ambassadors, a popular song in Goodwill. Skin the color of a brown paper sack. He was black, trying to teach us white kids to play, but confronted every baton breaking day by juvenile delinquents.
Now, was the image of Mr. Minifield marching through the Klan the thing that was in your mind incubating for so long before you wrote the song?
I had been trying to write about that experience for years, and that was at the core of it. And that's one thing I tried to get to at the ending, even though I'm speaking of these things as though I think of them beforehand and that they are deliberate, but actually I'm sitting at a table with a blank piece of paper and a guitar, and I'm using the chord progression that I have going at the time as a means of kind of extracting the lyric, but yes, I did intentionally try to create that ambiguity at the end. Where
he's the hero, though.
He is the hero. And, you know, sometimes when you're a kid, you don't realize who your heroes are until many years later.
But look, you've memorialized him.
Yes.
He kept on marching.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have Kevin Gordon with us, and he has been on a tour without stop for several days, playing the energy it takes. I've seen you, the ergs you put out, the caloric output is unbelievable, Kevin.
Oh.
How long proportionately does it take to revive yourself? Say you play for 2 hours. Does it take six to make up for that after you play to restore yourself?
Well, it's hard to say if, you know, this week, you know, playing every night once I got to Massachusetts, you know, sleep became a little more difficult every night. Although last night I was victorious. But yeah, by the time I get home, I feel like I could sleep for 2 days.
But when you get on stage,
mm-hmm.
what happens to you that makes you forget how tired you are?
Well, just that feeling that it's go time and it's time to do what you came here to do.
And trust the words.
And do the best you can.
And just trust the music.
Delivering the music. You know?
Right. I've heard you. I wish everyone could. And we will hear a little bit now. We're going to talk about memory, nostalgia. You are a very complex person. Luckily for music. And so you have many strands. And one of them is quite meditative
mm-hmm.
and has quite a bit of reverie.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to hear Walking on the Levee for a little bit.
In that big house last night where I played my guitar. Everyone's still sleeping off what they drank at the bar. Are they making quiet love beneath the turning of a fan? Did they wake to the sound of dogs barking at a man? I grew up down the road, been 40 years. Walking on the levee now, a stranger here. Read the graffiti on the pump station wall. Red spread scrawl. Did you ever have a dream your sure was real? What does God hide? What does God reveal?
Okay, we caught that one in the middle. So what happened before and what happened after? How did you get there? What was, your tone is so different in that song. What what mood were you in that brought you back to that place?
I actually started that song immediately after having that experience, that walk. Although I was actually trying to go for a run. But the clumps of Johnson grass growing on top of the levee were so thick that I thought I was going to break an ankle before I, you know, if I had kept going running. So I slowed down and started walking. And it was August in Louisiana, so by 10 in the morning, it's already 90-some-odd degrees. I guess it was, as you say, meditative, in grad school, you know, I studied with Jory Graham, among others, and one thing that we spent a lot of time with was Eastern poetry, haiku, and other forms, and just that idea of isolating the image and the power that that can have. Just really getting down to the thingness of the thing.
That's what makes you a different musician from one who hadn't studied poetry. Mm. It's the sensibility. Mm-hmm. It may not be the transformation of the line to lyric, mm-hmm. but it is truly just the paradigm you have mm-hmm. from being a poet first.
You know, in that song, like there's an image of a wasp at the end of the first verse. But it was a similar sort of thing where you're using a visual description as a springboard of sorts, you know, like Basho would have done, you know, so many others. So through that song, you know, I think there are elements of that.
And you're fully appreciated because the Boston Herald says, "What just happened? I'm knocked out. I'm flat on my can. Where did Kevin Gordon come from, and how have I missed him for so long?" We're going to hear a little bit of a portraiture, The Man with a Shotgun. Just want to hear a couple of minutes of that because we want to know how you linked up with this guy.
Watching Lawrence Welk from his easy chair, white gloves, rhinestones glow. Ain't no Detroit ride, no Memphis march, no troublemaker gonna stop.
Okay, give us an encapsulation of that story. Why? Why that story?
That story came from a memory of my great-grandfather and great-grandmother, who were country people. They grew up in rural north-central Louisiana. And after World War I, my great-grandfather came home. They farmed for a number of years. They would often go to Texas and work on farms, but then they ended up settling in Shreveport, Louisiana. He became a career firefighter. And one thing I remember from being a small child in their home is that there was always a shotgun by the front door of the house.
Did he ever hear that song?
No, okay. No, he's long gone. But I just started thinking about that image and the fear that image represents. You know, one thing I didn't get into the song was that being rural people, it was totally normal for them to have a firearm in the house. But there was also the element, yes, of fear, race-based fear.
Would it be fair to say that you start with image? I mean, I know you start with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You start with sound. I know you start with feeling. Mm-hmm. But do you believe that you are actually imagistic as a writer?
For me, it's always, the images always seem to be the core elements. I mean, of course, working on a song like Shotgun, you have the story in your head, or you think you know where it's going. And I was drawing from memory. Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather wasn't nearly as paranoid or mean a fellow as our subject in the song seems to be. Yet the details are still there, you know. The irony of watching Lawrence Welk on Saturday Night, and there's the African-American dancer on Lawrence Welk. Meanwhile, you know, and the whole show is sort of saying, Ain't Life Grand, while there are demonstrations going on in Memphis, Montgomery, Birmingham, elsewhere during the Civil Rights Movement.
Well, your songs have always a conscience. There's a social consciousness in your music, unintended, thankfully, because it's a subtext. So let us have a final poem.
Okay, thanks. This is an earlier poem, back when I was writing poems more actively. I believe this was published in the Southern Poetry Review eons ago. It's a poem I wrote in college, actually, called Bring Them All Back. Beyond this window, custodians are wheeling edgers from their shed. My mind reels on, stuck on nothing. Fingers absently click the nipple switch of the purpling neon lamp, and I remember the pine sap stickiness of fortune cookies from lunch, from which I pulled these words. Friends long absent are brought back. Good news comes from far away. I want to know which friends, what news. That Roxanne with good hips from high school just inherited 10 million and will soon confess her undying love. That will honeymoon in Rome, handpick gold toilets for our home in India. Or maybe Gary from third grade didn't die under a ton of rock salt while crawling through a rail car. And he and everyone who got lost in time or death is gathering at the Sheraton for reunion. I try to add it up, this lust for the improbable, wanting every ghost in my head to find me. The sputter of stubborn engines hums against the window as janitors mow the courtyard with the concentration of blind children listening for strangers.
The voice of Kevin Gordon, country music star. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation and Friends of Poetry, Hiram LaRue and Candace Katz. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Karen died by lightning strike, I was told. Walking on the levee, pretty ghost at my side. The past and the present are caught in my eyes.